everybody. Welcome back to another episode of On the Mix. I'm your host, Lindsay. And today I thought I would talk to you guys about the very true, but also very sad story behind the song Jeremy by Pearl Jam. Some people I think probably don't know that this is based on the true story of a teenager named Jeremy Wade Dell. And if you have seen the music video for the story, then perhaps you are familiar with what ends up happening to him. But there's a lot of controversy that surrounds that music video and with the song as well. And I'll get into all of that. And I just really wanted to give a platform for Jeremy's story because not only does it correlate to something that is still very prevalent to today's society, which, by the way, trigger warning for those of you that are sensitive to topics of mental health, suicide, and gun violence and things of that kind of nature, then perhaps skip this episode. But I just wanted to give Jeremy's story a platform and share it with you guys because I think it's important to tell his story and to have him not just be remembered from, you know, one song that was written about him in the 90s that people probably forgot, because Jeremy was a real person. He had friends that loved him. You know, he had family. So, you know, he should not be forgotten. So without further ado, let me just get started with telling you guys who Jeremy Wade Dell even was. So Jeremy, he was born in February 1975, and his parents are Joseph and Wanda. At age 5, his parents separated, and then they eventually got divorced. Jeremy, his parents, and his sister were living in Garland, Texas at the time when his parents divorced. His dad ended up remarrying but divorced his second wife, and then he later gets married again. His mother also remarried, and Jeremy ended up living with them until 1989. And in 1989, his father, Joseph, ended up purchasing a home in Richardson, Texas with his new girlfriend. So this is where Jeremy would kind of spend more of his time. He would hang out seemingly at this house in Richardson, and this is where he would end up going to school. He ended up attending Richardson High School in Texas in 1990. But before I even get started with him and how he was in school, let me tell you more about who he was before he even attended Richardson High School, the school that is at the centerfold for this entire story. So in March 1990, Jeremy moved to live with his father and his dad's girlfriend at this house in Richardson, Texas. A week before he ended up moving, he met a girl named Nancy at a church retreat. The two of them began dating, and in early March and in April, they dated for a little bit of time. You know, they were young, they were teenagers, so, you know, back then you don't really date for that long of a period of time. They lasted for about a month before Nancy ended up breaking up with him. So this would be kind of the catalyst for Jeremy starting to spiral a little bit with his mental health. 2 days after the breakup, it was alleged that Jeremy was hospitalized after attempting suicide for the first time. And this would not be his first time attempting something like this or having ideations of suicide, of course, as we see later on what ends up being his fate. But this is where it kind of all stemmed for him. So he was admitted to Timberlawn Psychiatric Center, where he would live there for some time. He would stay there. There were a lot of kids around his age that were at Timberlawn. And it was here in July of 1990 that he would meet a girl named Michelle, who was also a patient at Timberlawn. The two of them started dating while they were at Timberlawn. And while he was at Timberlawn, you were allowed to get day passes, wherein if you were like, hi, I wanted to go see my family, I want to go have a day off today, you know, they would let some of the patients have these day passes so that you could visit your family and friends if you wanted. Jeremy took one of these day passes and he drove to Nancy's house, his friend Nancy, the girl that he dated earlier. And according to sources, he threatened to shoot himself because of his family and his school problems. Unfortunately, this was going on here. So again, you know, more instances of him threatening to kill himself here. Jeremy, unfortunately, was just going through a lot. Like, you know, his parents divorced at 5 years old. You know, and when you're that young, you internalize that stuff differently. You think, oh, well, my parents divorced. So in the mind of a child, children would think that it's their fault, right? Even though it has nothing to do with the kids and everything to do with the dysfunction of the family of the parents, They can't be together, right? Children at that young of an age, they can only think about themselves and their own needs, right? Because they don't have the self-awareness yet of thinking grandeur and outside the realm of just their own world. So when they're young and they depend on their parents and their parents separate, they start to internalize and they start to think, oh, well, it's my fault that my parents divorced, right? It has been alleged throughout a lot of people that have said throughout the years that knew Jeremy, that have said that his parents weren't necessarily the most perceptive at figuring out what was wrong with Jeremy or necessarily putting a lot of effort into getting him the proper help that he needed. Let's just say that. I would never dare to question the parenting styles of these two people here, but that's just what a lot of people that knew Jeremy personally, like his friends, have said. People that, you know, knew the family well, like his really close friends that knew his parents as well, they would point out that, well, his parents weren't necessarily the most attentive to Jeremy's needs, let's just say. So, you know, Jeremy internalizes all of this at a young of an age. His parents get divorced and then remarry other people. Now he's met this girl that he likes and then she breaks up with him. And so Jeremy seems to be a very sensitive soul and he's hurt tremendously, right? So, you know, you think that you just want to end your pain, right? So you think the only way to end my pain and suffering is to kill myself, right? I believe this could be a reason why he attempted suicide and he continued to do so because he has these girls that he likes and they don't reciprocate feelings for him and his parents, they're divorced and he's going through that whole thing. He's trying to find himself. He's a young kid. He seems to have a very sensitive emotional and mental state, which is fine. That's not a bad thing to be. But I think Jeremy, again, he wasn't given the proper treatment that he needed for whatever it is that he was dealing with. Jeremy could have been dealing with some kind of more serious mental issues aside from just suicidal tendencies or depression. There could have been something underlying that Jeremy had that his family never knew about because he never got the proper treatment. But at this point in time, you know, he takes one of these day passes. He goes to drive to Nancy's house, and this is where he threatens to shoot himself because of his family and his school problems. In October of 1990, he gets released from Timberlawn, and he goes to school at Richardson High School. So at this point, him and Michelle, they were still kind of dating each other, if you will, and the two of them separated at this point. So it's been said by Michelle that she liked Jeremy, but that she just wanted to be friends with Jeremy. So that was kind of the whole point of them breaking up there was she liked him, but she just wanted to be friends with him. And Jeremy, you know, he took this and his breakup with Nancy, you know, seriously, but I can at least applaud him for still being friends with Nancy. In October 1990, Jeremy begins attending Richardson High School. So he's new to the school. He doesn't know anybody. He just came out from the psychiatric center, and he literally, again, months prior to this, had the suicidal tendencies, right? So it was also alleged that Jeremy's insurance to Timberlawn was all of a sudden up, and that's why he left Timberlawn. So I don't know how accurate that is to say if his insurance was all of a sudden, like, up. His parents couldn't afford to take him there anymore, so they just let him go. He needed a lot more help. He was just one of those where, you know, the system failed him, essentially. He just should not have been going to school at this time. So when Jeremy attends Richardson High School, he had his locker searched 3 times in just the few months that he was there before Christmas break. So one of the times that his locker was searched, they ended up finding several bottles of Whiteout, but also they found this book called Cults That Kill. So this became an occurrence where over time, Jeremy would tell some of his friends or his peers. Like, for example, there was one instance in November that he talked to one of his friends, Ashley, and he said that he wanted to kill himself. So Ashley reported this to a counselor. He just kept telling all of his school friends that he had, that he didn't want to be here anymore, that the school wasn't helping him, and that he was not only going to kill himself, he told one of his friends, Antoine, that he was going to murder his 5th period math teacher and then kill himself. On the same day that this happens, December 11th, Jeremy allegedly steals $47 from a cash box in the gym after a basketball game. What he needed that for, not sure. Again, Jeremy is just a troubled kid, and I think he needed a lot more help than people gave him. The following day, on December 12th, at 9 a.m., Antoine ends up telling the assistant principal about Jeremy's alleged threat against his math teacher, because of course, you know, yeah, when someone alleges that they're going to kill one of their teachers or themselves, that would be something that you would tell a teacher, of course, that makes sense. At 4:30 p.m. that same day, the assistant principal notifies the police about the threat, as well as the book called Cults That Kill that was found in Jeremy's locker. And also in Jeremy's locker, there was a deer's leg. It almost like taxidermied. I don't know why that was in there. That's one of the most strange things that was in his locker. Like whiteout, I don't know. Okay, who knows what he could have been using the whiteout for. Cults That Kill, I don't know. But the deer's leg, that is quite weird. I don't know what meaning or significance that has, if that's even correlated to the Cults That Kill book at all. I'm not sure. No one really knows. Only Jeremy knows. But that was found in his locker as well. So at 9 p.m. that same day, Jeremy is arrested for theft because he stole money from the cash box. And then the police also questioned Jeremy about this threat that he made against his math teacher. So they asked, why did you threaten to kill not only yourself, but your math teacher? And Jeremy says that he made a general comment about a teacher ending up dead, and that the comment was twisted as it was passed from student to student, like a game of telephone, and that he doesn't have a reason to hurt a school official. Which, to be fair, I could believe that. I think he was just lashing out and he was frustrated. You know, I think he just said something, and I believe he didn't mean it, because I think if he meant it, on the day in question that this whole story is based off of here, he would have done something more. But the fact that he only took himself out of the equation and not anyone else, I think that shows that he really only intended to hurt himself and not anyone else around him. I think he seemed like a sweet kid, but unfortunately, he just didn't know how to deal with all the things that he was feeling inside of him. And so he just was probably angry and upset. And he's like, oh, I'm going to kill my math teacher and then I'm going to kill myself. I'm no therapist or psychologist, but I'm just saying, I think if he were to take that threat seriously, that would have happened. So I could believe that Jeremy said that, but I believe also at the same time that he didn't mean to literally say he was going to actually kill his math teacher. But of course, because he made statements like this, that scares kids, right? That scares people. And of course, that makes so much sense. If you were to hear that from one of your peers in school, you would not risk that being just a passing comment. You'd want to report that. So I'm glad it was reported, but at the same time for poor Jeremy, this makes his situation a lot worse. But police recommend counseling for Jeremy. And his dad tells the police that Jeremy has had a lot of psychological treatment and that he was at Timberlawn in early 1990 and that he was checking into other options for Jeremy moving forward, which that could be true. But as far as we know, that never happened, of course. So, I mean, that could be true. I think Jeremy definitely needed to be somewhere else. He did not need to be at that school. I mean, the system at large really failed him tremendously. Not only did this school fail him, but Timberlawn, I think, failed him too, because clearly they let him go way too early before he was ever okay to fully be out. And if the whole situation allegedly that the insurance ran out and they couldn't afford to have Jeremy go and get treatment, so that's why he left, if that is true, then that's really unfortunate too. But I think they needed to make sure, they needed to monitor him, but also make sure that he was getting proper treatment. So his dad also asks for the theft of the $47 from school to be reported to the juvenile system for help. And this is where police took note of Jeremy's physical appearance. So Jeremy was 5'8". At this time, he was 140 pounds. They said that he had a conservative appearance. They said that he also had short, straight brown hair. He had a cross tattoo on his left arm. He had two gold earrings in his left ear, and he was wearing a jogging suit and tennis shoes. And that's one of the only instances that we know of his physical appearance. In any of the pictures that we have of him, they're very blurry, grainy pictures. I wish we had more photos of him, like from around that time. It sucks that we just don't have those. I'm sure people that knew him, that were friends with him, had photographs of him, and they're keeping those private, which I fully respect. But I wish that the class picture of him was more HD quality because the picture is very grainy, but that's just a side note. So on December 14th, this was 2 days after the police came to Jeremy here. The assistant principal tells police that Jeremy was already back in school, but he was confined to in-school suspension and that Jeremy would be patted down on occasion as he would come into school. So this is where things start to go awry, because Jeremy was confined to in-school suspension. So that essentially means, I mean, if you've been suspended before, you kind of know what that means. Like, you have to sit in a classroom full of other kids, but you can't speak. It's silent. You can't talk to anybody. If you need something, good luck, because the teachers wouldn't really approach you for anything because you were considered a bad, troubled kid, right? So for instance, in this in-school suspension, it was said by kids that were in this in-school suspension class, if you will, that like the teachers would only say yes or no. They wouldn't really talk to you, which I think is very indicative of like someone being in prison. You know, like, it almost felt like Jeremy was like in prison instead of being in school. The fact that the teachers wouldn't even talk to you, like you were a regular human being, they would only answer yes or no to you. And it was all on their will of what you would do or not do. I mean, that's really moronic to me. Why does it have to be that you can't like treat each other like normal human beings and have regular, normal conversation that the human brain needs in order to survive and like feel normal, you know? So Jeremy being secluded in this in-school suspension program for weeks was not good for his mental health either. And also, he was patted down on the occasion due to the things that they found in his locker. They just thought Jeremy was a problem child. Back then, I really think that a lot of people thought that if you were a problem child, you had to be dealt with in a specific way as if you were a criminal. And that is not how it should be. And I think we are making strides to change that now. The assistant principal also says that he is working to get Jeremy committed to a treatment program and that school officials have been advised to take appropriate precautions against Jeremy. Again, they thought that he was like a problem child, which is unfortunate. I mean, yeah, Jeremy has made threats on his life and that one threat on his math teacher, which is unfortunate for him because, again, I really don't think that he intended to take anyone out except for himself. So he's just hurting. He's just hurting a lot. And being stuck in in-school suspension only made it worse for him. So this is now coming up on late December, a week after Christmas. Jeremy tells his friend Michelle, his ex, that he was given a gun. So now we're moving into the new year, 1991. We're approaching the days upcoming to the day in question. It's January 3rd now on the timeline. Jeremy allegedly tells a classmate that he will kill his math teacher the following day, of which that never happens. So again, he's making these threats of harm and harming himself and his math teacher. He must have not liked his math teacher, clearly. He must have been very upset with his math teacher, of course, because he never made threats against any of his other teachers except his math teacher. So we're coming up now on January 6th. At about 11 a.m., Michelle calls Jeremy, and she noted that he seemed depressed and on acid during this call. She tells him that she might be pregnant. Michelle would tell the police later, after this whole incident happens, that her and Jeremy dated, yes, but she never slept with him. She was just friends with him. So Michelle just tells Jeremy, hey, I might be pregnant. Jeremy somehow thinks that the baby is his. So in this conversation on the phone, Jeremy tells Michelle that he would die for her. So he's thinking that this baby could be his baby. But of course, that never happened because the two of them never consummated their relationship, of course. So that's what Michelle ends up telling the police. So after this phone call, Michelle thought that was a really weird conversation with Jeremy. Let me call his mom to say what happened. So Michelle calls Jeremy's mom to say that Jeremy sounded really odd on the phone. But according to Michelle, she felt that his mom didn't show concern over Jeremy. Like, oh, being a bit maybe blasé or passive about it, not really taking it too seriously at the time, which is unfortunate. But now we're moving on to the following day, January 7th. At 3:30 p.m., Jeremy, who is still in in-school suspension, leaves school and catches a bus for a counseling appointment. And then at 6:30, the counseling session ends and Jeremy walks to his father's house, which was nearby. His dad's girlfriend was not expected to return home until 9 p.m., so he's at the house. At 6:25 p.m., Jeremy pages his dad to say that he is indeed at the house. And in the evening time, Jeremy calls a fellow student to ask for help getting rid of a stolen stereo and getting drugs for a friend in rehab. Jeremy also talked about, quote, being tired of the bullshit that he has been experiencing at home, end quote, and that he was in big trouble and he was really mad at his dad. So whatever context that entails, I don't know if him and his dad had some kind of argument or something, but clearly, of course, there seems to be some kind of dysfunction in his family, obviously. So he's dealing with Michelle and her saying that she's pregnant, and Jeremy immediately believes that it's his child. Jeremy now has been saying over and over again that he wants to kill himself, and then his family problems, it's all coming down on him very, very, very hardcore. So at 7:20, his dad picks up Jeremy from the house. At 8:36 p.m., Jeremy calls his mom, and then at 10 p.m., Jeremy ends up going to bed. And now we are in the timeline of the day in question, the day in which the Pearl Jam song is forever immortalizing Jeremy's story. So a few hours after Jeremy's dad went to work, he phoned the house to make sure that Jeremy was up and awake, and he told him, hey, it's cold outside, just letting you know, you might want to wear a jacket today. So it seemed like a normal conversation, nothing out of the ordinary. So before leaving the house at around 7:30, Jeremy called Nancy, and he told Nancy that he and his dad were moving to Tokyo, Japan later that day, which is odd, right? This is very indicative of the fact that, of course, on this day, Jeremy had already made up his mind on what he was going to do. Of course, this was premeditated. How far in advance he knew that he was going to do this, I don't know if we know or if we could parse that together from the information that we have, but it's at least known that on the day of, he planned this out hours beforehand. So he kind of had a feeling he knew what he was doing. I think this was premeditated by a couple of days at least, based on some of the things that we have. And I'll explain that after, the evidence that we have. But he tells Nancy that him and his dad were moving to Tokyo. So he's setting it up to explain his absence. He's just saying, oh, I might not be around. Why? Oh, we're going to Tokyo. How? Like, that is the most faraway place from Texas that you could ever be. So he's giving an excuse for his absence, right? He's trying to put things in order so that it doesn't seem odd. That could explain his absence, right? He also told her that he was mailing her a letter along with a ring inside. So sometime later, at 8:20 in the morning, Jeremy paged his dad that he was at school. But 40 minutes later, his father got a call from the assistant principal saying that Jeremy never reported to in-school suspension. So the thing with in-school suspension that I don't believe I mentioned prior is that you are confined to that in-school suspension. You cannot go to your other classes. You have to stay in in-school suspension until they allow you to resume normally your regular classes. It was said that he did not go to in-school suspension that morning. So Jeremy was, of course, on campus, but instead of going to in-school suspension, he ended up at a place called the Eagle's Nest, which was essentially a student commons area, which was named after the school mascot, which I guess was the Eagles. So he went to the student common area instead, and it was here that he saw two of his friends, Andy and Jennifer. And these two were sophomore girls that Jeremy knew, and they were sitting at a table, and they were skipping their first period study hall that day. And they saw Jeremy approaching them. So Andy greeted Jeremy and said, where have you been? I haven't seen you in weeks. So he made up a lie and he ended up telling Andy that he had been absent because he was visiting his girlfriend Michelle in Houston. And he said that Michelle was pregnant with his child and that he would be moving to Houston soon to be with her. Again, giving another excuse to explain his absence, right? Oh, I'm not going to be here because insert excuse here. But this just shows that he really believed that Michelle was pregnant with his child, right? So this was when he asked Andy for a favor. And according to her, he said that he reached into his jacket and he pulled out this letter. And she said that it was already in an envelope addressed, but it wasn't sealed. And this is where he says to her, can you mail this for me? I'm not going to be around after school. Andy replied, no problem. And then it was here that she recalls that Jeremy reached back into his jacket and he pulls out a diamond ring. So this is corroborated with the fact that he told Nancy earlier on the phone, I'm going to give you a letter and a ring in the mail. So Jeremy holds up the ring in front of Andy, and this is where Andy recalls him saying, I wanted to do this in front of you. This is where he then puts the ring in the envelope, and he continues on and he says, I wanted you to see this so you knew how important it was to get mailed. And of course, this is one of few suicide notes that Jeremy had written to some of his friends. This is a very important letter, of course, that Jeremy wants to mail out. And he wanted to do this after the fact because if he had mailed it the previous day, it would have given away his plans and his plans would have been thwarted. So he wanted to wait until after to make sure that the letter would be sent into her at the right time. So Jeremy gives Andy the unsealed envelope with the ring inside, and this is where he left. She noted that he did not look disturbed at all. Also, in the Eagle's Nest that morning, Jeremy had approached another girl, and he handed her a cigarette butt that he had been smoking. And he says to her, "This is mine and something to remember me by." So again, like giving away his possessions, but also he is letting people know in a way that he is doing this. So even though he looked peaceful, he looked serene, that is a massive mistake that people can overlook, right? Jeremy had a history of being depressed. And even though people have said that he was a nice, sweet kid, he was very respectful. He also had a side of him that was very angry and very sad. But now all of a sudden today, on the day, he's very peaceful because he knows that it's gonna end soon. His pain is gonna end. I think really what we could maybe ascertain is Jeremy knew what he was doing. The plan was already in motion and nothing was gonna stop him. So he had this set out perfectly. So after taking the envelope from Jeremy, Andy put it in her purse and she went to the restroom to freshen up her makeup and to fix her hair before she would attend second period. This is where she said that she had every intention of reading the letter. And as she was about to reach into her purse to grab the letter and read it, that's when the bell rang for second period. So at that moment, she was faced with a choice. Do I read this letter or do I risk being late to class? She thought to herself, well, I'm gonna have it all day. I'm not mailing it until the end of the day. So she thinks to herself, I will read it later. So she puts the letter back in her purse and she went to her second period class. What would have happened if she had read the letter? I mean, I don't know if there would have been enough time maybe to save him. I really don't think there would have been enough time. Maybe there would have been, but Jeremy was already very hellbent on it. But we can't blame anybody in this situation except, you know, for poor Jeremy himself because he was very determined to do what he was going to do. So if they had thwarted his attempts now, who knows? He might have had attempts later on if he was spared on this day. But then we wouldn't have had the infamous Pearl Jam Jeremy song, right? So I think this is how fate kind of intended it to be. And also this is what Jeremy clearly wanted. So the time now is 9:40 in the morning. Jeremy comes in late to class. So he goes to his English class, which again is a little bit unusual because he was supposed to go to in-school suspension. So he ends up going to his English class and his teacher says, Jeremy, not only are you late, but you don't have a slip to admit him back into class after in-school suspension, which was one of the rules that if you had to go to another one of your classes coming from in-school suspension, that you needed a permission slip to even be there. And Jeremy knew this, of course. So he says, ah, I'm so sorry, I forgot my slip. I'll have to go get another one from the office. So he gets a hall pass from the teacher, Mrs. Barnett. He takes off his coat and he puts it on his desk. He then leaves the room to get this permission slip. And instead of going to the office to get his permission slip, he goes to his locker. And this is where he grabs a gun. Now on this day, he was not padded down like they said that they would do. So again, as fate would have it, if Jeremy had been patted down on this day, maybe they would have caught the gun, but who knows, right? Who knows? So he goes to grab his gun and he walks back into the room and a classmate calls out his name, but he doesn't turn around. I was confused as to what this meant, but as I'm thinking about it, I believe this fact meant that in the hallway, a classmate noticed Jeremy and was like, hey, Jeremy, but Jeremy kept walking into the classroom. I believe that's what this fact is intended to mean. So he enters back into his classroom. He puts the hall pass back on the teacher's desk. And this is where he says something similar in vain to, Miss, this is what I went for. So in front of everybody, all of his classmates, in front of his teacher, this happens very fast. So no one can stop this from happening. And no one could expect this to happen either. He pulls out his gun, he puts it in his mouth, and he shoots. His suicide occurred in room B201 with the 357 Smith & Wesson Model 19-4 in front of a full classroom of 30 students. And this is where pandemonium sets in. So immediately, the class stands up, and while they are in shock, there is a girl that runs out from the classroom and she's screaming. And most of the kids, they go back to the back wall of the classroom, like in a corner. And they all huddle together and they make sure that the teacher's okay. And they're just frightened. They're just like, oh my God, what the hell's going on here? So his suicide is reported at 9:47 in the morning. Roughly an hour later at 10:30, the medical examiner is notified. Of course, everyone is going into a frenzy as to this noise. Now, people heard this and they thought, some people described it as like a loud book being slammed down, like a textbook being slammed down on the desk one time. Some people thought that it was a prank. Some people thought that it was like firecrackers going off. But when they saw a girl running out from the hallway screaming, and some kids from the adjacent rooms saw Jeremy's legs like out laying down on the floor, having seen nothing else, they knew something was wrong. And they were trying to like revive Jeremy. They were trying to make sure that he wouldn't die. And I believe the teacher said, you can't let him die. Like, you have to help him. So one of the officers that was on the premises already, he kicked the gun out of Jeremy's reach because they thought he could get up again and maybe kill himself or shoot himself again. So they kicked the gun out from his reach. They called the police. Medical examiner was notified. At 11 a.m., half an hour later, the medical examiner arrives at the scene, and of course he pronounces Jeremy dead. It had been an hour and a half. Like, there was no way he was going to survive that. He was dead on the first shot. At 12:01 p.m., the medical examiner observes the body, and they prepare his body to be taken to the morgue. And a couple minutes later, this is where the police inspected Jeremy's locker. And in Jeremy's locker, they find, again, the same type of things. They find the books. They find the whiteout stuff. But they also find a book that is similar in vein to What to Expect When You're Expecting. So that's one of the most famous, I think, parenting books out there. Everyone, I think, knows the title of that book. And this is where Jeremy was like preparing himself to be almost a parent in a way. And he was reading this book. So he thought that Michelle was pregnant by his child, even though, again, she says that that was not true, that they never consummated their relationship, but that was found in his locker anyway. So again, could that be a contributing factor to why he decided, I'm going to kill myself? Who knows? But that is the facts as it's presented. At 12:30 p.m., the medical examiner transports his body by ambulance to the morgue. And then at about 1 p.m., the police attempt to contact his mother. His dad was already contacted. And so they were just trying to make sure that his family was notified, course. And at 1:30 p.m., the medical examiner performs an autopsy. So again, they notified and they said in their autopsy report, he was 5'8". At this point, he was 128 pounds. So he had lost a significant amount of weight since the last time the police were there and inspected him and looked at him alive in December. He had green eyes, again, straight brown hair, and he had three tattoos. To go from 140 to 128 that quickly in a month, that is very alarming. Not even a month, actually. The police would interview his friends, other students, the teachers, his parents, his friends, everybody, just to try to get a handle on what was going on with Jeremy, why this would happen. And immediately, I do have to give props to the high school. Immediately in place, they had counselors on the scene, and they also had student counselors, where there was a group of students that volunteered to counsel other students in situations like these. The kids and the teachers were given the proper treatment that they needed, but unfortunately, Jeremy did not receive the same in life. But at least the kids that had to be witness to this were given the proper treatment. So this is where then, of course, they interview Michelle. They figure out that Michelle was not pregnant. And then they learn that Jeremy had given out some suicide notes. And of course, one of those suicide notes was the infamous note that Andy had mailed to Nancy. So the suicide note in question reads this. It says, quote, sorry, Nancy, by the time you get this letter, I will have blown my head off, aka suicide, better known as last way out. Newsflash, not your fault. It's Michelle's, along with about 137.5 other problems. I was just writing to see if you wanted to go to the funeral. Call my house and ask for my dad. At least you didn't have to hear the boom. Other suicide notes were found in the days following his death. He did not just give one, he gave a couple of others, including a handwritten note dated January 7th to Michelle. And in that note, he said to Michelle that she was not to blame, even though in the one to Nancy, he said that it was Michelle along with a million other problems. So that's very interesting in that regard there. But Jeremy had also mailed not only a note, but an audio cassette to a friend in West Texas, in which on this audio recording on the first side, on side A, he was like almost happy and like jubilant and like was so different to side B, because on side B, that's where he became more somber and depressed. And he was detailing his suicide plans on this tape. That is essentially Jeremy's story. Now, a very upsetting story, of course, very sad story. He should have been given the proper treatment. Now, where does Pearl Jam fit into all of this? Well, Eddie Vedder, he sees in the newspaper this story. And now, I think locally, it has been said that on the news locally that day that Jeremy's story was reported. It was reported in the news twice in newspaper articles. But I think in terms of the TV side of it, I think his story was broadcasted once and then it was like back to the regularly scheduled programming. So his story did not really receive a whole lot of fanfare or media attention, which is sad, you know? I mean, you know, Jeremy, his story needed to be told, you know, like he wasn't just a kid from Texas that killed himself in front of his peers and his teacher. You know, he was a kid that was suffering greatly and he needed help. Again, the failure of so many systems set in place here in America. But Eddie Vedder has stated in many interviews over the years that he saw the story in the newspaper and he remembered a similar sort of story to what happened to him when he was in high school, where there was this kid that was sort of similar in vein that he knew. Eddie said that this kid was troubled, that he brought a gun to school one day. Eddie said that sometime before this classmate of his brought a gun into school, that he had gotten into a fight with this kid. So Eddie had personal history with something similar in vein to this in his past. And then reading the story about Jeremy, he was really struck by the story and he did initially think, should I write a song about this? Like, should I bring this a lot of attention? I mean, again, this was Pearl Jam's song, Jeremy, on the album 10. And that was their debut album. He had his own music that he was writing, but Pearl Jam was freshly kind of formed here. So for him to have on his debut album written a story that immortalizes Jeremy's plight, I think is very poignant because I don't think a lot of people would do that, you know? And the Jeremy song is one of their most popular songs. Not only that, but again, the music video, very controversial. You know, they had a kid that looked very similar to Jeremy. I don't know how they found a kid that looked like him, but that's so wild to me. The main controversy of the music video at hand is that in the original cut of the video, they show the actor who plays Jeremy putting the gun in his mouth and shooting himself in the mouth. And that was mostly the scene there. So MTV, they couldn't play that. They didn't want to play that. So they made them make another edit, which essentially was alluding to Jeremy possibly killing himself. But they cut away from the part of him putting the gun in his mouth to the kids in the front row being blood splattered and looking shocked. Because of that cut that was taken that explained the story, people associated that as, oh, Jeremy in the video, he killed his classmates. They associated him as being a school shooter, which is not the situation. So it's a very dire little detail that was taken out from the original video that showed that he actually killed himself. He did not kill his classmates. But because the classmates in the video were blood splattered, they were like, oh my God, Pearl Jam, they're promoting this kid as a school shooter, which is not at all what was intended at all. So you can watch the original video, actually. It's on YouTube. You know, it's nothing too horrifically bad at all. It's just, again, it alludes to it, really. But, you know, of course it is, you know, graphic in nature, of course. I really do applaud Pearl Jam. Eddie Vedder, he wrote the song. But Pearl Jam at large for writing this song and giving Jeremy's story a platform. I do know, though, that when this came out, that his family was not happy, that they thought that they were just using their son's death, suicide, as like a publicity thing or for money or whatever, you know. I could understand that from the family's perspective, but at the same time, without Pearl Jam, Jeremy would just be another statistic for teen suicides, and his story would not be remembered. Like, Jeremy is immortalized because of the Pearl Jam song, which, by the way, is a great song, but I mean, he gave a good platform for Jeremy, I think, for his story, because he was taken so personally by this story. He was so struck with it that he could not stop himself from wanting to write a story for this Jeremy kid, but also due in part to his own personal story with something similar in his past as well. So it's a song that merges both of those stories together. It's not 100% about Jeremy. A large crux of it is, but it's also due in part to what Eddie Vedder experienced when he was young with that kid at school. So me personally, I believe I'm glad that Pearl Jam did write a song about Jeremy, because again, Jeremy would just be another fallen kid in the cracks of society that was not handled with care at all. He would be another statistic, another name, or another kid that just got lost in all of it. Instead, people know Jeremy and they go and they look for his story and they go to understand. And it's a cautionary tale as well. So I think not only does Pearl Jam do a great job of promoting Jeremy's story, but I think they also show it as a cautionary tale as well, that mental illness is no joke and that, you know, you should make sure that your friends are okay and check in with your loved ones. I think it's a great thing that they did personally. I know that his family, his parents did not appreciate this and they still don't like it to this day. I know that they have issues and they take issue with Eddie Vedder. Fine, that's fine. For me personally, as a listener, but also as someone that, you know, has learned about Jeremy's story, I really think that his story needed to be told. You know, how many people can say that they wrote a story about a random kid that they saw in the newspapers one day and that struck a chord with them, and it was so poignant for them that they had to write it? And, you know, Eddie has said that he wanted to make good on making sure that Jeremy's story was not forgotten and that he was not forgotten. And let me tell you, Jeremy Wadell is not forgotten at all. So I really have to give props to Eddie Vedder and Pearl Jam at large for, you know, really doing this. And again, on their debut album, which is, I think, a little controversial, you know, I would imagine for someone's debut album, you'd want to just keep it focused on making sure that you can gain an audience and fans on your side. But the fact that they did this, I think that really shows that they were trying to set a precedent of, we'll talk about true and honest things here, that we're not just a rock band that's going to put out a million Even Flows or Better Mans, that we're all about making sure that our songs have a message as well, which I can respect. So at large here, that is the story of Jeremy Wadell, but also the story behind the Pearl Jam song, Jeremy. I hope that you guys learned something today that you hadn't known about before. I will leave some links in the description of the podcast if any of you need it or if any of your loved ones need it. So rest in peace to Jeremy. That is such an absolutely tragic story, but rest in peace to Jeremy. And I hope that you guys have a wonderful rest of your day and a great week, and I'll see you guys next Wednesday with another episode of On The Mix. I'll talk to you guys later. Bye, guys.